Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Those who opposed Republican State Representative Paul Scott and pursued his recall were successful. Scott losing by an over 200-vote margin. The effort was the tip of the iceberg as lawmakers across the state faced recall efforts this year, including Governor Rick Snyder. And while citizens should have the power to act out politically, are these regular recall efforts harmful to our political system? To talk about that, I'm joined by House Minority Leader and Democratic State Representative Richard Hamel. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael.
Now, Paul Scott drew quite a reaction from his constituents, their grassroots efforts and the involvement of the MEA leading to yesterday's vote. Do you think that this is a valid action to take against a lawmaker who votes in a way that those who he represents strongly oppose?
Well, I think that the recall law has gone a lot farther than what I believe most people are understood it should be intended. Now the standard is that all you have to do is be clear in the language when it comes to be submitted to the review board. It doesn't have to be truthful. It doesn't have to just be for malfeasance. And it certainly, because of those rules, has had an effect on how you go forward with process and trying to craft legislation. I expect it to be the same way at a local level too, because that's happened in my community also.
Do you think, though, the constituents should be allowed to recall a politician based on his or her votes?
I think there ought to be allowances for specific stuff. Obviously, I would like to see for malfeasance. I would like to see for things that you've done in office, and I think that you should be held accountable for decisions that you've made. But I think that you can't. We have to be careful if we take the time and go through an election process, and someone is elected and they don't vote the way somebody may believe needs to be done, and the language isn't clear, I don't think that we should go forward. This has been a destructive process in this last, certainly these last several months, obviously. And one person's vote is, or a person's vote on a specific issue, I don't believe meets the test for recall.
We saw dozens of recall efforts fail to make the ballot, including the one against Governor Snyder. Aren't the majority of these efforts harmless and simply allow voters to express their outrage?
Well, I think the voters are beginning to express their outrage all the time. I mean, if you go back in 07 when it came to state elections, there were a number of our members who were targeted for recall, and a lot of resources go into trying to make sure that that people understand what the language actually is, and that it's not necessarily truthful, and so people have the right to do that. And there are many, many venues to do that. They can call, they can write, they can talk, and trust me, I hear from constituents all the time about what they think of my votes, and so there are a lot of ways to do that. We're in a 2-year cycle for an election, and it's not that long before you get a shot at getting somebody out of office when it comes to these. The terms that we're in, especially here at the House.
I mean, considering that most of the recall efforts were completely unsuccessful, what's really the harm then in letting citizens pursue them?
Well, I'm not saying that they shouldn't pursue them, but I think that you should pursue them for specific purposes. And I think that's what we need to be looking at. What is allowable? What should be allowable? I don't believe that there's anybody in the state that thinks that somebody should be able to submit language that's not true, and that the Board of Canvassers or whoever has to look at that language is bound in many ways to accept that language, even though it's not true, but because it's clear. And in those cases, that's what's happened here.
Now, when you say not true, what exactly are you referring to?
Maybe a specific vote or a specific action that someone has taken that all you have to do is say Representative Joe here has voted this way, and it's been harmful to people or whatever that is, and it may not necessarily be that they voted that way. So the standard is extremely low when it comes to that, and you cannot be telling the truth and still have the language be accepted.
That sounds outrageous. So there's no structure for pointing out that that allegation is actually not factual and having it challenged in some way?
We've even had some folks that are on these committees that have to review this language say, I have to approve this language, even though I know that it's not right, because the law says that it has to be only clear, not truthful.
I'm talking to House Minority Leader, Democratic State Representative Richard Hamel. I want to go through some of these key points of legislation that are now being considered in the House. There's been this nationwide reaction to the anti-bullying bill passed by the state Senate, which includes a provision for religious or moral speech. How do you expect the House to address this bill, and do you feel that the Senate bill is as flawed as some have said?
Oh, yeah, it's extremely flawed. And it's as I think the Senate Dems have said, it's a licensed bully for some folks and no accountability for many others. I think that the House is going to take up a bullying bill tomorrow. You'll see bipartisan support for that bill. It will be nowhere near what the Senate had passed, which is a good sign. And whereas it may not go as far as I'd like for it to go, I think it's at least a start down the road to trying to address a problem that everybody admits is there. And we need to do something to help give some relief to those kids that are in school that are going through that.
And now legislation to eliminate our no-fault uncapped auto insurance law looks like it's not going to move ahead. It's something insurance companies have pursued for a long time. Do you expect that to come up for a vote at some point, or is it dead at this point?
Well, I think right now, my thought is that it's dead at this point because there's not enough support on either side of the aisle for that. Obviously, there are things that the insurance companies would like to see changed, but from our perspective in the House, House Dems, we're not willing to throw a lot of these people under the bus for the changes that are being proposed right now. So, if there is something that makes sense for everybody, then I think you might see some movement. But for right now, I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
When we see these kinds of bills stall after serious consideration, I mean, considering the majority-minority numbers, is it basically that Republicans are not coming together on some of these issues and just can't move it through with their majority?
Well, I think that you have seen historically, both in Democrats and Republicans, that there's differences of opinion in caucuses. Every day, from our perspective, we have people who believe that we should have a very aggressive bullying bill, and we have people in our caucus who don't believe there should be a bullying bill at all. So it's the same way in Republicans' caucus. I'm very much expecting that, and I think that happens all the time, and you can see that they have a significant majority, and it should be very easy to move a no-fault bill. But there are enough people in their caucus that believe that it's troubling. So I think that's why it stalled.
When it comes to education reform legislation, especially removing the cap on charter schools, is that something you expect will end up being a party line vote when it's addressed?
My guess is that's true, yes. I think if it comes up, I believe it was supposed to be up for a vote today, and that committee was canceled. And so I'm not sure when that will come up again, but I expect at some point in the next month or so after we get back from Thanksgiving that it will be probably a vote we'll take, and it will be party line as far as I'm concerned.
In the vast majority of this education reform, do you expect it then to basically pass and be signed into law?
I would say most of it will be, yeah. I think I don't know that anything that's been passed by the House and the Senate has been that's sitting on the governor's desk. I believe he supports anything that's been passed so far. There's been some bipartisan support for some stuff, but for the most part, it's been party line votes on some of the changes that we've seen.
I had Doug Pratt from the MEA on the program yesterday. I wonder, when it comes to their voice in the Capitol, do they really have one at this point?
Well, I think, yeah, the MEA is a strong voice. And you know, I always try to tell people that the MEA, there are a lot of Republicans that are MEA members. And there are a lot of people who vote both ways that are MEA members, too. Certainly, they've struggled because they've been under attack, and I believe they have been when it comes to education policy. So they do have a voice. They will continue to have a voice, and their recall efforts were successful when it comes to Representative Scott. And I think that you'll see them around the Capitol, and they're great friends and great supporters of public education.
Finally, what's the general mood of Democrats in the House and the Capitol? It looks like Republicans are shaping the future of Michigan this term, moving through some very major reforms. How are you viewing this ongoing process as the minority leader?
Well, it's been difficult because a lot of the reforms that we really have no interest in being part of, but yet they are happening. And I think that a lot of people who are very discouraged, which is mostly middle-class folks who have seen effect on taxing pensions and other things that have happened, people will have to realize that elections have consequences. And in this case, when you have complete control in this government, a lot of things can move, and they can move awful fast, and there's not much we can do other than to let people know just what's going on. And that's really, I think, our charge, to do whatever we can to block the stuff that we believe is bad, work with Republicans when we find something that makes sense, and try to move our initiatives, which are, which are important to everybody, I think, all over the state.
You know, it is interesting, though, the economy is coming back, at least in Michigan. Business leaders are much more optimistic about what's happening here in the state than when it comes to the country. Could we very well see things turn around by the next election and Republicans maintain control?
Well, I think that we are seeing a resurgence when it comes to the state a little bit. We've seen it actually since the first of the year. A lot of the policies that were put in place for the last several years before this started would help get that going with the investment in alternative energy programs. And, you know, who's to say what that means when it comes to an election cycle, whether it's a national election or a state election. If things are going well, a lot of people feel more comfortable. But I think there's enough that's happened in the past 10 months or so to keep people very much engaged in over the next year or so. So it's really hard to tell right now.
House Minority Leader, Democratic State Representative Richard Hamel, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for the invitation, Michael.
Well, you heard the interview, so let me know what you think. Was the subject fully covered? Were there questions that I missed? Any feedback you have, whether good or bad, will help us make the program better. Our email address, capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. That's capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. We'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.